Welcome, viewers and listeners, to CHP Talks. I'm here with another exciting guest this week, Corinne Mori, who is an ER nurse from Nelson. Corinne was terminated for non-compliance with the COVID vaccine mandates. She has been on the front lines in the battle for medical freedom and truth, and she heads an organization called BC Nurses Fight Mandates. She says that the real threat to our society is the political action taken by our government leaders enforcing authoritarian measures to a contrived emergency. The uncovering of a mass failure of protective mechanisms in our society has led to a deep dive into legal and political interference resulting in the failure of our healthcare system. And we'll mention it again later, but I'll just give you her website is bcnursesfightmandates.ca. Welcome to the program, Corinne.
Thank you. I'll just give a brief story of how I got to this place. I was in private business and building in my early life until late 40s. I went back to school and I came out of nursing school at the age of 50. And since that time, I've done specialty training in Emerge and have worked mostly in Nelson in the ER, the medical units, long-term care, home care. And also I've done a couple of stints up in L'Aquilam in the nursing station there as well. So I have a variety of experience, even though I've been in as a nurse less than 10 years. But when the COVID issue started to sort of come to the surface in our province, it became a rather interesting scenario as we were hearing from the media that there was this pandemic that was released all through the province, and yet working in the hospital, we just weren't actually seeing the evidence of that. And we knew that there were people that were getting sick. I acknowledge that. But there was also some very clear concerns around the way that they were being treated. And it's become quite well known that this instant reaction to get them on ventilators was actually the wrong thing to do, as it blew out lung tissue and people died from that. And just the way that there was protocols being handled, it was very confusing as to how, you know, the story that was being told us and what we were seeing in hospital, the two weren't jiving. So a majority of the nurses actually did not initially get the vaccination because it was not something that was really becoming a part of our day-to-day experience, having to deal with really sick people. And there was some hesitancy around it just because it was a new thing. And we knew that it wasn't the same technology as vaccinations as what we had previously understood. And so there was just awareness around that. And it wasn't until it started coming out that the only way you're going to be able to keep your job was if you got this vaccination, that a lot of people felt coerced into taking it to be able to provide for their families. Now, that also became a big signal for many of us that there was something, it was a red flag. Forcing any kind of medical intervention is against our against the Medicare Act, because it is your right to determine your own medical autonomy and your decision making. It was a huge part of our nursing ethics in supporting people's own decisions, and coercion was never tolerated. So it was super interesting that they were rolling this out onto healthcare professionals. And initiated quite quickly a population of healthcare professionals that then had to make a decision rather quickly as to what their position was, because we had already worked in the pandemic for a year and a half. We had already been effectively using PPE. There had been no problems. That's the point of having infection protocols. And then we were being told that we were going to lose our profession if we didn't comply. So this became a massive source of distress for it wasn't just nurses, there's doctors and lab and x-ray, many components of the healthcare system that were involved here. And to know that if you did not take this vaccination, you would lose your ability to work. This made the decision one that was going to have some significant repercussions. You did not take this process lightly. You did not make this decision without great consideration and self-reflection and courage, because it was going to create consequences that we had no control over. We were also under the union, who the nurses union in our case is the entity that has the legal representation for us in the employment arena. We cannot defend ourselves. We've given that legally over to the union, and so we were dependent on them to protect our the collective agreement, which is the legal agreement between the employer and the employee as to the rules of how we're going to play. And there was already a policy in place that no nurse would ever be terminated or disciplined for not taking this mandatory vaccination. So that was just 2019. So these were the rules of the game. And yet we discovered afterwards that during the months that the terminations were occurring, there was nobody actually working at the union. The president had resigned, the vice president went on leave, the CEO was on leave. The only person working was the treasurer, the one who was collecting the money.
Really, so there was nobody representing you at that time, nobody taking your case to the government and saying, here's our agreement. You are not allowed to compel our members. It's a violation of the agreement. Nobody took that position.
No. And in the year and a half since, you'll notice that any kind of public media or public statements from the union, they have never once talked about the terminated nurses.
Really.
And so this became quite concerning for us, because that is what they are paid to do, is to represent us. And so, I mean, it took us a while to understand what was happening to us. I mean, first off, it was very traumatic that we lost our jobs, we were denied EI, we had no representation. Nothing made sense in terms of what we had just gone through, and this now, what Bonnie Henry was declaring was the next step to stop the transmission. I mean, I did a freedom of information request from all the health authorities, and the 6 months after the termination, so from November 30th to June 30th, I requested how many COVID sick calls occurred in health authorities. And excuse me, there I only got results of four, but even in that, there was over 20,000 COVID sick calls. And so, I mean, before I was terminated, I was exposed twice in the workplace to COVID from double vaccinated nurses. They were doing contact tracing. I knew who it was. So they knew all along that the vaccination did not stop transmission or stop infection, and yet we were still denied the ability to work. So part of what I had to decide was personally, how was I going to respond to this? And I had already been under investigation from the nursing college because I had put out Facebook posts and had participated in protests, and there were complaints put in. So I was already starting to incur investigations and disciplinary measures. And I decided, you know what, I have to go public, because I need people to be able to find me. And so I started kind of just doing interviews and putting things on Facebook. And I actually had quite a collection of nurses that, not just nurses, but people from many sectors contact me. And so then we ended up having about 140 nurses join together. And we hired an employment lawyer to help guide us through this process. We're nurses, and yet we had to do this crash course in the legal system on all the political contributing factors. We had to educate ourselves on, where is going to be the most effect for our piece of what was going on. And so we decided that we needed to address the union because the union massively failed in its responsibility. And in the legal arena, we were told from several different lawyers that if our union had stood up and protected nurses right at the beginning, none of these mandates would have been able to flow through the rest of the province. So I really do hold the BC Nurses Union accountable for the damage and the subsequent rollout of this diminished healthcare system. I hold the union responsible for that. So we ended up the only mechanism we have, we can't, as union members, use the courts or sue anybody. The only thing we can do is file a complaint against the union through the BC Labour Board, which we did last September. And the complaint was for a failure in their duty to represent us, and that we suffered discriminatory behavior and they acted in bad faith. And we have a massive amount of evidence to sustain and support this position. Now, the BC Labour Board has 180 days to bring things to resolution, which is up in about 3 days. We just received a letter from them on Friday stating that they were going to give themselves an extension on this. And so we are still waiting to see if there's going to be any kind of mechanism in this province that will ensure that there is fairness and the ability for these protective mechanisms to actually be enforced. So
Isn't
stay
it?
tuned.
It's something that, is like the federal government investigated itself, right? And now you have a provincially appointed board. I'm not sure exactly how the BC Labour Board is, constituted, but now they've given themselves arbitrarily an extension on the deadline that should control their response to you. And you might have to take them to courts, although I don't know which court is going to make a good judgment today. We've seen lots of disappointing things happen in the courts, but it's that's terrible that you've had to wait this long for just even to have your case heard.
Well, and what's interesting is I think we have this attitude that the system is broken. And I actually look at things a little differently. I think the systems are actually constructed to protect us. But in those systems, we have people who have co are corrupted, and they have a lot of influence on what is going on. And so those protective mechanisms have not been enforced. Although I will say that I am starting to get indications that, well, what I'll say is there are good people in all of these systems. I believe that. I totally believe that. I also believe that these good people are starting to get a little bit anxious about what they're seeing unfold. And they're not necessarily willing to reveal themselves or come out as to their concern. But I do see that in a few things that I've just recently been involved in the last week, that there is assistance that seems to be coming. And so I am curious to see if the influence of the good in these systems is going to be able to influence and adjust what's going on. Now, I just discovered today the vice chair that is overseeing our complaints was somebody that was appointed just a year ago to the labor board, and the person who appointed him was David Eby. So I am certainly interested to see how this plays out. I actually did send an email today just saying, I'm aware of this and I am concerned. I said very clearly, I'm not accusing of that there's corruption or anything like that, but I am concerned that there are political influences that could be causing the delay of us being able to be heard. And so I just wanted them to know that we're aware of that. They know that we're aware of that. We'll see how this plays out. But there are so many things that are under the surface that have contributed to how things are playing out. And it's taken me a year of deep diving into all of this to really appreciate how complex it is. And the attitude of healthcare workers, it's quite a mixed bag. I mean, I would say healthcare nurses in the city are, I see more of an attitude that we deserved it. The ones that are in the rural locations, as you know, probably in your communities, it's the rural communities that are impacted the most by the failure of the healthcare system to provide services appropriately. And so, ERs are closing, medical units are closing, we don't have access. And from what I can see, it really is, it's poor management on the health authorities' part. And I don't know if people really understand that it wasn't actually Bonnie Henry that started the terminations. The public health order only said that we weren't allowed to work. The terminations were carried out by the health authorities, and that was actually in violation of our collective agreement. So they've done this illegally, and it has to be the unions that hold them to account, and they didn't do their job. So it's the health authorities that have instituted this. It's the health authorities that are putting so much money towards administration instead of frontline workers. And there's another component I think the public should be aware of. And this is like a huge thing. So when I was working a year and a half ago, four shifts in a row was straight time. The fifth shift was overtime. And the sixth shift was denied because there are fatigue policies in place to ensure that nurses are fit to practice and that the public will not be experiencing unsafe conditions because of fatigue. Currently, we have nurses that are working 16 shifts in a row, that are taking 2 days off a month. There are so many unfilled shifts that the health authorities are allowing nurses to work at that rate, and they are doing it willingly because of how much money they make. But the facts are that no nurse can keep up a level of care when you are working that many hours. And if anyone in the public experiences repercussions from negligent care, this is one thing that needs to be addressed, is that the health authorities are not making sure that the public is protected by enforcing these fatigue policies. So just a thought there.
Given all that and the mountains of evidence that are, coming forward every day about the vaccine injuries and the fact that it, you have the Prime Minister of Canada and the President of the United States both vaccinated and both, claiming to have had COVID, like it's so obvious, it's dead obvious that these vaccines were not effective. They weren't, preventing either infection or transmission. And yet, why do you think that the BC government is being so obstinate with emergency rooms closed and all these the things that you've mentioned about nurse fatigue and so on? Why have they not backed down and said, you know what, we made a mistake, we made a bunch of mistakes, and we're going to try to rectify them? And they've invited the other government workers back to work. Why is it that in the healthcare system, the BC government is being so stubborn to not recognize this travesty and at least try to undo some of the damage?
I think that their long-term plan was to change the law, and that's what happened with the Bill 36, with the new Healthcare Professions Act that was just passed end of November. And when that occurred so quickly, where there was no due diligence in going through all of the articles associated with that bill and the repercussions of it, the lack of discussion, and how quickly the NDP government just took it to vote, and many of their own ministers had no idea what was even in it. What was now, so in terms of even things like mandatory vaccination, that was always a component of an agreement that was made between employers and employees as to what conditions were required for people to work. Now, this responsibility is taken out of the hands of the parties that actually can discuss and bring forth their evidence and come to a conclusion or a resolution about it. And now it has been transferred to the authority of government-appointed panel members, who Adrian Dix has already said he's not going to guarantee that anyone from the profession is even on these panels. So the whole new structure of this Healthcare Professions Act, which is removing elected members of representation and now instituting government-appointed people to oversee all of the requirements required for licensing, it has now shifted again another level of control and authority over to the government. And so previously, up until now, it was only the public sector that had been impacted this. So basically anyone who was getting their paycheck from the government was forced into these mandates, and private healthcare was not. You know, you have chiropractors, dentists, they're all running their own business and their income comes from private sources. So there wasn't the same leverage to force them into it. But now this mandatory vaccination is actually a component of your ability to get licensed in this province. And this has created a great deal of unrest, anxiety, and distress among private healthcare. And already you've had a mass exodus of nurses out of the province in order to work. And now you have other segments of healthcare who are like, this is becoming too, it feels threatening. And so many of these professionals are now starting to take out licenses in other provinces and creating an exit strategy. So now, you know, what we do have of our healthcare system is, again, having another foundational pillar removed out of it, because people feel that threat that they will not have control over their ability to practice, and that decisions are going to be made by people who have not necessarily any knowledge of what's involved. And, you know, in fact, you know, the amalgamation of many of these colleges, the Adrian Dix stated that, you know, it's just going to help with us standardizing disciplinary measures and standards of practice. And yet one of these groups, he's put opticians and psychologists together into the same umbrella. And it's like, there's nothing about this that makes any rational sense. And the ability to actually make healthcare function better, there's no indication. In fact, it looks the opposite, that they're creating structures that are not well equipped to be able to deliver healthcare. And well, we're, like I said, we're already seeing that. I mean, I'm from Nelson. We've had medical units close. There's big staffing shortages. And this has created such a stress. And I mean, even in our own town here, just recently, a doctor came to set up practice and was unvaccinated. And because the hospital refused to give her privileges to come into the hospital, the clinic that she was working at terminated her contract. And so we have lost several doctors in this community. Here's one who's willing to take on patients, and they are refusing her the ability to practice. So we have many people in our community who cannot get healthcare access, and our own system is taking out people who are here and willing.
Do you know how many healthcare workers have been terminated by this mandate, and at least nurses or other expanded areas, and then how many you say there already has been somewhat of an exodus out of the province? I certainly would see if Bill 36, when it's completely implemented, if unless it can be stopped, but when it's implemented, I just why would any healthcare practitioner stay here if they want to stay in, just staying here at risk of fines and penalties, and no self, no autonomous control over their business and their, special skills of caring for the sick.
It's real. And in fact, I had a discussion with some of the nurses today because some of them have created some bumper stickers, hire back, the BC nurses. And I said to them, where are we at right now? Like, what really is our messaging? Because this now has transitioned. The nurses that were fighting to get their jobs back are seeing how like the very fundamental aspects of what gave our profession integrity. So the ethical standards, the professionalism, the protecting patient rights is no longer a priority. And we can see how badly the system is functioning. And I would say I'm finding that a majority of the nurses are saying that they cannot go back, that they cannot align with this kind of delivery of healthcare. So now what do we do? Like this has gone on so long, and we have seen such many of us have experienced extreme hostility from not just the public, but from coworkers. And how do you expect people to return into that environment? I don't know what the answer is here. I do know that this is not going to be an easy solution. And I'm going to say very straightforward, I don't think we can stop the collapse of what is going to occur because it's infiltrated so many levels, and it's in effect. And we are trying as we go to figure out how we're going to respond to that. And there are many individuals that are trying to create and problem solve and come up with ways to respond. But this is a problem that was created over several years, and we're not going to get the solution quickly. And we're going to have to expect that there's going to be some extreme distress for a few years as we try to address this. And you asked about numbers. I only know sort of the nursing numbers, but there was many other healthcare professionals attached to that. I am trying to still get the last freedom of information requests that I've asked for, but it looks like we're around 1,600 terminations for RNs, and there's at least 3,000 that took early retirement to avoid this, and there's still some that are on leaves, either maternity or whatever, that have not come back because they'll be terminated on return. So it's the equivalent of staffing the Kelowna Hospital, and so sometimes there is this oh, there wasn't that many. Actually, these nurses that were removed are the ones that were keeping the Grand Forks Hospital going, and now that medical unit's closed, or they emerge over in East Kootenays. It's the rural areas that have suffered the consequences of this, and there is an impact because we are not there.
Yeah. Now the government is talking about, of course, they like to put it in glowing terms that they're going to bring in foreign trained nurses and doctors and so on. Of course, they could have done that before COVID if they had been interested in actually making sure there were enough doctors and nurses here. But now, if you do it, if you do such a thing in a rushed manner, hastily, and start just bringing people in, do you anticipate any problems with, bringing in people who are inadequately trained, or and will they have to also have to comply with the vaccination mandates? What kind of problems do you see with that approach? I mean, the government just likes to throw your money at things, but is it any kind of a solution for the problem they've created?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I think maybe the public assumes that the training across the planet is the same, and it's not. Like, Canadian nurses are highly trained, and the public is requiring more and more complex interventions. So it's not just a matter of nursing that you have to be aware of. When you enter different countries, terminology, names of medications, language barriers, all of these components will impact the ability to provide good care. And it was interesting because one nurse told me, I just was at the nursing station and I heard one nurse who is of one origin or nationality and had a very strong accent was talking on the phone to a doctor from another nationality, and they couldn't understand each other.
Yeah.
And
Well.
so then the ability to actually transcribe orders correctly means that with this communication glitch, if a nurse gets it wrong, and medications and dosages and interventions are recorded incorrectly, it's always the patient that is the recipient of this inability to get the system to work properly. Now, does that happen all over? No, but it is a very real consideration that there is not the province of BC has already said that they're going to expedite the process for these nurses to come through, that the assessment of their skill is also going to be expedited, which means nobody is going to actually be reviewing the training levels, how well they are equipped for working in this system. And you, as the public, really have no ability now to assume that every nurse that cares for you comes equipped with the same level of training. And that's just the reality.
Yeah, very, very tragic. So what do you think it'll take to wake up? Of course, we'd like to see the government turn around on a dime and say we were wrong, but they probably need significant public pressure. And there are freedom groups or various types of concerned community groups across the province. But it seems like once the pressure comes off a little bit, the mask mandates are gone, a lot of government workers are back to work. What will it take to wake up the citizens of British Columbia to have enough, a significant influence on the thinking of the elected officials, who then, of course, have to work with the bureaucrats who sometimes make up the rules? Without too much supervision. What will it take?
Well, I mean, I just see a general two outcomes that just very superficial. One is we aren't going to do that. There's no guarantee that we are going to actually be able to reverse what is planned in this country. And if that is what is propelling you forward, the guarantee that we're going to win, I think we all need to do a little reevaluation here, because there is no guarantee. The other path is, for me, I am not responsible for the outcome. I am responsible to do my job here. And I think all of us who are participating in this are here because we feel that that is our calling, our destiny, our reason for existing at this point in time, is to try to help humanity remember that our role as humans also has to be exhibited in a spiritual component, an integration of our deeper levels of trying to integrate as humanity. And that is going to require a lot of giving up your own opinions and your own personal stances on things. We are all different. There are 8 billion of us, and there's going to be 8 billion different experiences and opinions and belief systems. And this is, to me, very, as we were talking earlier, relatable to a human body, in that liver cells are very different from heart cells, which are very different from skin cells. Yet we need every one of those cells to keep our bodies functioning. And this need for us to always be telling others how to believe or how to respond is part of, we are contributing to the problem by taking those positions. Our role right now is appreciating that all of us are going to have our own journey, but the goal is, how do we find connection to the spirit? How do we find connection that things like integrity and ethics and justice are not just words, but they're actually components and characteristics of what we are trying to achieve? And I believe our success in rebuilding society is going to be very dependent on our ability as individuals to integrate these characteristics into how we live. So to the degree that we're willing to do that is to the degree that we will have power to influence and change our society. It's going to be up to us how we determine the outcome by how we determine how I'm going to live today. So I am personally understanding that my role as a nurse is ending. March 31st is the last day that we have to renew our licenses. And I have finally been able to understand that I cannot personally align with those entities anymore. And there are still nurses that feel that they have to be in the system, and I appreciate them because they are the ones who are helping us know what's going on. And they are there caring for people. And there's a lot of nurses who are doing that in a wonderful way. My role is, I am transitioning out of nursing because I feel that the terminal illness that I have to address is what's going on in society. And so my role now is, I'm focusing more on how do I help create community networks? How do I help create trust among people in families and neighborhoods and in our local areas? Because that, to me, is where we are going to see if we can actually create organisms that are healthy and that are inclusive and that are, the only way the government has to enforce division is by us participating in it. Mm-hmm. So if we refuse to take that stance, if we allow the ability for everyone to have a voice, even with polarizing topics, the fact that we would at least try to value somebody's experience and try to restore and bring healing is it's part of our job. And so we need to figure out how to integrate this, because we're not coming into this knowing everything that we're supposed to do. We are figuring this out as we go. So we're going to have to cut each other some slack. We're going to have to just let some things go and not get ourselves all in a tiff or be judgmental and critical, but find those people that you trust and that you know that you're to be connected with, because it's these groups of people aligning together that create leadership, that create a path, that help bring courage to groups. And we're in a process that is going to take a while to rebuild. And it's just not going to be easy. So I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Well, thank you, Corinne. I often tell people regarding our where we're at in society, and of course it is much broader, as you say. This goes way beyond just BC, way beyond the nurses' situation, although that's a very important thing right now for BC residents. But we're at a place of societal collapse, and we have the two things facing us at the same time. One is anarchy, chaos, and the other is central government dictatorial edicts, tyranny. So they seem contradictory, but they, in our case, we're experiencing them at the same time. The wheels are coming off, but we're also being forced down a certain path where in the past we would have had choices whether to get on a different train or whatever. And now we're all kind of, you can't get off this train. They don't, well, you can, but if you want to participate in society in a full sense, that you have to play their games. And many of us, of course, are saying we're not going to play those games. We don't know what our role will be. But I give the example, if it's like a car going over a cliff. We don't know yet if we are in free fall or if we still have two wheels on the dirt, but we have to act as if we still have a chance of changing things, put our full effort into it, and if it's gone too far too fast and our efforts are unsuccessful, at least we will have the ability to say we did everything we could under the circumstances, and to manifest, as you said, integrity, truthfulness, and personal freedom, even when there is clamps coming down on societal freedom. So.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that we have provided every opportunity for these entities to make a good decision. We have all done our part in communicating the information, of stating our position, of our experience, of holding up the standards of what the law is. We have worked hard as a population to remind our government of what its responsibility is. And I feel like we have done everything we can. And now, whatever they choose to do, the consequences that are incurred justly. They have been given the chance multiple times to change their position, and they have not. And just like for us, we incurred consequences for our position. In our case, it seems like the universe is making sure that doors are opening and opportunities are coming, and that we are expanding into another level of our life experience, which is going to be beneficial for everyone. But also at the same time, there's going to be repercussions for these parties that are involved in government decisions that are causing harm. And so I stand in that we did a good job of making sure that they had every opportunity to change their position. And now we cannot stop
Yeah.
what's going to happen to them.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Corinne Maury. Thank you very much for joining us today. We really appreciate this, and God bless you as you carry on with your work with BC Nurses Fight Mandates. And for those who want to know more about Corinne's work and the work of that group, it's bcnursesfightmandates.ca, and check it out. And how can people help? Is there a way that people can help you in your work?
We were raising funds because when we go to this labor board hearing, we actually wanted the lawyer to be able to represent us instead of us having to do it ourselves. I think we have enough funds for that, but I'm also looking at the possibility of how do we create the access to the public in terms of being able to get like medications, like antibiotic kits and that kind of thing. So we're starting to look at, is there a way that we can start being able to provide at least tools to the public? If they can't get to a doctor, can we have things available for people that they can actually get information from a professional on how to different interventions that they can try? But a lot of this is we need to have those tools in place to help us, right? So we're just starting to look at that kind of thing. What else can honestly, just harassing our union, BC Nurses Union, and telling them that they are responsible for this is helpful. The union is going to want to try to promote striking across the province very quickly. They're going to go to a vote about that right now because they want to have higher wages. I think the public kind of responding back and saying, you don't protect your nurses. You have failed in your duty. We don't trust that you are actually doing your job is very important. So in our case, I would say pressure against the union would be really fantastic.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much again. And spring is here, summer is coming, and we hope that it's going to be a good summer for you and your family and the work that you're doing with the BC Nurses Fight Mandates. Thank you very much for joining us today. We'll talk to you again
Thank you.
as the future unfolds before us. Thank you.